Thank you very much. Hello, everyone. This is Brenda speaking. Welcome to ATRT3 Community Work Party Meeting Number 3 on the 16th of July, 2019 at 1800 UTC. The review team members joining the call today are Erica, Michael, Yap, Cheryl, Tola. I think someone just joined. I don't see. We do have observer Sophie Hay joining us. Attending from ICANN organization is Jennifer, Nagar, Brenda, and our writer Bernie has joined us. Today's call is being recorded. I'd like to remind you to please state your name before speaking, and I'll turn the call over to Erica and Michael. Thank you.
Hi, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is Michael Karanikolas for the record. So I would suggest that we jump right into it, particularly as we've got a lot to discuss. Erica, I hadn't really discussed the division of labor with you early on, but is that all right? Maybe if I start us off and going through the preliminary recommendation areas and take away from ICANN 65, and then you can lead a brief conversation about examination areas and priorities for the survey.
Hey, Michael, this is Erica. Yes, that sounds perfect to me. I kind of had that in mind as well and didn't vocalize it. So you read my mind. So we can jump right in that way.
Wonderful. We don't, I think, need to do too much of a recap on ICANN 65, but I think it might be useful to discuss briefly just so that there is a clear understanding of the genesis of the document that we're talking about now and how it relates to the discussions. Essentially, as those of you who were in attendance at ICANN 65 will know, and hopefully everybody will know, at that meeting had a series of very brief conversations with the different groups. According to my notes, it was the GNSO, the SSAC, the CCNSO, the ALAC, and the NCSG. And I also believe there was one with the GAC, but I had a conflict for that one and couldn't make it. Coming out of the discussions that we had that took place there, so coming out of the discussions that take place there, I had my own kind of set of notes in terms of takeaways on areas of relevance to the community group, and Erica had her own. And so last week we sort of compared notes back and forth and looked to pull out any potential action areas, recommendation areas to move forward with based on what was raised by community members at those meetings. And the result of that conversation back and forth between Erica and myself is the document that was sent around in the run-up to this call. Would it be possible to get that on screen just so folks can follow along as I take us through it? And wonderful. Jeff, I think, on the email list mentioned some confusion as to the nature of this document and to where things were coming from, which I do apologize because it was a bit ambiguous. But in terms of the numbered areas that you see, which are somewhat narrative, as was pointed out on the list, and seem to be kind of statements of opinion or ideas of things to be done. That's basically either suggestions that were directly stated by folks in some of the working groups, or in some case, and in those cases, I try to source it. Although looking again at the document, I see there were a few cases where it wasn't actually literally sourced, where that was an oversight on our part, or it's conclusions that are drawn from the discussion that we heard. So as we just go through this today, I think it would be useful to review these action areas, solicit any feedback on them, and as we go, I will also mention where this stuff is coming from, where it's not noted. So the bulk of the conversations at ICANN 65 that were specifically spurred by community related to the PDPs, because we were only able to get one question into the discussion, and so that was the area that we chose to focus on. And one of the things that I think we heard a lot was that, and this originally came up with the GAC, and I believe, again, it's left vague if you look at that bullet number one. But I believe it was first raised at the GNSO in terms of this idea that that policy development processes can go quite a ways down the road, and then that the ACs tend to jump in later on, which makes it more challenging insofar as, you know, they may be trying to reopen arguments that have already been had and people feel are already settled. Certainly, I definitely remember hearing that at the CCNSO, where that was a specific complaint that was made about the GAC, which is that presentations are made and information is offered to them, but that the GAC tends to wait until the end of processes to feed in, which can make it challenging. And then that sort of built on another problem that we heard in the ALAC session, where I think there were also complaints about challenges engaging at the front end, since the ACs seem to have a back end back-end role rather than a front-end role, which somebody at the ALAC expressed that they felt that that structure disadvantages their participation. So that first statement that you see, which is that front-end engagement is important, particularly with the ACs, in order to generate buy-in to PDP processes, and there is a perception that the current structure might disadvantage participation by the ACs, as well as making the decision-making process more challenging for the people running the PDPs. That statement is based on feedback that we got, or what sort of the community stakeholders mentioned in specifically the GNSO, CCNSO, and ALAC sessions. And sort of drawing from that, we saw a need to, you know, it's not a fully baked conclusion. There's no recommendation to be drawn out of that, but that's certainly an area to discuss because it was raised on multiple occasions as a challenge to the PDP process and to engagement with the PDP processes. And I think that that could potentially tee up some areas of investigation or further discussion. So that's the first bullet on PDPs. I'll just read out the second bullet on PDPs as well, and then maybe we can open this up and have a bit of a discussion if there are any comments on this. The second bullet was also drawn out of comments that were made in a number of different sessions, and this one is explicitly sorted. So this is what we meant to do for all the sessions, but just as an oversight, it didn't appear for all of them. The second bullet notes with regard to the PDP process that while these processes are open and the information is always out there and technically it's accessible to anybody that wants to track these processes, they're also incredibly technically complex. And this creates the sophistication and technical complexity of these processes creates a huge challenge in promoting public accountability, because it's one thing to say, well, the process is open, anybody can track it. But if you aren't intimately familiar with the subject matter, intimately familiar with the specific jargon and, you know, acronym soup, which is there, and as well, completely caught up on everything that's been said over the last, you know, 6 months, so that you know exactly where the current conversation thread is coming from, engagement is really, really, really tricky. And that, first of all, creates a problem in terms of public accountability. And it also creates a problem even in terms of the different working group or different SOs and ACs who may not fully understand the process if they're just kind of tuning in. They may understand the broad subject matter, but the specific subspecialization is really tricky. So I think in the CCNSO, someone mentioned that this was a real challenge where, you know, sometimes you've got one guy or one person who's running points on a particular PDP, and then that person has to leave. And it's enormously challenging for another person to come in and try to figure out what's going on, and that can sort of disadvantage the PDP. And that, you know, also ties into broader challenges with accessibility. My own thoughts on this are that, you know, I think that talking about the jargon and the acronym soup is, you know, it's a little bit baying at the moon at this point, because it's so deeply entrenched in ICANN's culture. I think it doesn't hurt to mention it as a recurring problem. And the need to simplify things is always there. That's probably not something that's going to change immediately. But one thing that did come out, and I think this was from the GNSO as well as from the ALAC that sort of hinted at this idea, is a strong need for better onboarding and for producing material which facilitates engagement by novices, and to look into ways to overcome the existing knowledge bar to participation in PDPs. So that was an idea with sort of a partially formed recommendation coming. So those are the takeaways that we had with regard to PDPs. I think it would be beneficial to open things up very briefly for a bit of a discussion before we move on. Are there any thoughts on what's been raised so far? And these could either come in the form of like disagreements or, you know, areas to clarify or take this forward. And I see Cheryl has a hand up, and over to you, Cheryl. What are your thoughts?
Thanks very much, Michael. Cheryl Langtonor for the record. First one, and it's almost working in reverse order from what you've presented. When you refer to PDPs and the CCNSO aspect that you quoted, where there was the one person leaves and then, you know, the disconnect may occur, are you referring to their own PDP process? In other words, the PDP of CCNSO as a support organisation, or are you referring to their involvement in other PDPs, for example, GNSO ones, ePDP, for example, is an example there, or cross-community activities, because they're vastly different things, one of which would be debatable in terms of your assessments and one of which is not. So we need to be clear. So that's the first question. Let's deal with one at a time.
Yeah, thank you for that clarification, because it is an important one. I believe the discussion was about cross-community PDPs, and that I think it was Brian, I think, that mentioned that sometimes they have a person liaising with these different PDPs and then they lose that person and then it becomes really tough to track.
So that's a universal aspect that I suspect we'd also be able to make a commentary there that is applicable even within, for example, all of the other parts of ICANN. I'm relatively confident that if we did a pop quiz across all of the constituencies or even the leads in the constituencies and stakeholder groups in the GNSO, that they wouldn't be totally afay with a GNSO PDP, let alone a cross-community working group one if they weren't involved. So I think that's something that we need just to make sure we're clear on what we're linking the commentary to, the reliance on a very few people as liaisons and representatives may have some design issues that need to be considered. Perhaps recommendations associated with that would be the desirability of having, understudies or individuals prepared to step in, which of course is part of the modelling of ePDP, for example. So I think that's something to just make sure we've got right stuff around the right set of assumptions. Coming back to assumptions then briefly, and I think we also need to pull out the difference between the different types of PDPs. So there'd need to be an intro paragraph that recognised that, of course, ASO/NRO develops their policies in the following ways. We know that. You don't have to tell us about that. It's managed in its own fashion, but it's not terribly... Again, it would be equally criticised under the put up all the billboards and see who can come. And if you put all the billboards up in the desert, or if you put them amongst 9 million billboards, how do you get where is the public accountability, let alone the community accountability within the ICANN community in that model? And I think that's something that all of the PDP processes can be subject to some criticism for. Along with the sheer numeracy of them sometimes, or the scope when you look at the GNSO ones. So that's an important aspect to pick up on. I think that goes across all of them. But the concept that you raised in terms of the ACs, we probably need to also recognise that we recognise what the bylaws say the role of the different ACs are, and there is a slight difference between the GAC and the ALAC, although both are primarily advisory to the ICANN board. The ALAC is specifically required and listed to be engaged in policy development process, so it has a stronger mandate to be at the front end. So if there's aspects of its design that is not facilitating that, then that has to be fixed and addressed. Where the GAC doesn't actually have the same aspect focused in its bylaw mandate. So just they're the points that I think we might just want to shake out and expand just slightly. So not in any way criticising any of the points, but just make sure we clearly recognise the differences and definitions. Otherwise, all we'll get back from our audience is, but we're special, or we do this, or we have that. Thanks.
Thanks, Cheryl. That distinction between ALAC and GAC is quite well taken. Bernie, do you want to go next?
Sure. just a few points from my personal experience. I'm also supporting the CCNSO PDP on retirement right now. And although there's no official process, we go around asking everyone, the CCNSO asks all the community members if they want to send someone or two people to participate in the PDPs. Now, this one is on retirement, is very specific to CCTLDs and has limited interest, but it should have interest to the GAC. And I know we've specifically asked them several times to provide us a liaison, someone who could participate in discussions as we're going through the PDP and report back. But so far, just absolutely no traction in getting a person to participate. The second point is, again, on that same PDP, and Yap is on that with me. The language and knowledge bar is not very high on that one. So to Cheryl's point, we have to be careful in not putting everything into a single bag here, because I could honestly say that anyone who would want to join that PDP to follow it probably have a half day's reading to do, and they would be fairly up to speed. So I was just trying to set some expectations here. Thank you.
Thanks for that. Yep, do you want to go next?
Yes, I just thought to make a small remark that I mean, about the matter of when somebody drops out, people have problem in thing. Then it's apparently a big gap. I mean, it is partly that the communities itself should be aware of the problem, and it's kind of I mean, I know, for instance, at the ESSEC, we always have somebody in the back who is willing to take over when somebody drops out for one or another reason. And so, I mean, it's partly due for the internal organization of the group delivering the representative or the liaison on how to organize that. I mean, if you put everything in one basket, I mean, yes, then it is a problem on the short term.
Yeah, I mean, that it did strike me as both Cheryl and Bernie were speaking, you know, the flip side to this idea of, you know, having a secondary point of contact or an understudy to the work, someone ready to step in, is this challenge in getting people to serve as liaisons or to get people to engage in the first place. Now, I think that the specific point that was mentioned with regard to the GAC, I think the GAC is a bit of a special place and a bit of a special case. And, you know, the complaints that are there about their engagement or the way that they engage is obviously going to be addressed more directly by the GAC subgroup, who I think have their work cut out for them in trying to kind of square that circle between the role that they play and the role that governments generally are going to expect to play in this process, and you know, what would make things work smoothly or what's best for the multi-stakeholder process. But certainly I can definitely see a tension between, you know, wanting to diffuse engagement out in a way that losing one point of contact isn't as fatal, and existing challenges in securing participation for all the different working groups that people are doing. Just to note something that was put into the chat by Cheryl, another reference point on jargon and onboarding issue. We will need to recognize the joint paper on that matter published by ALAC and GAC a few years back. That sounds like a very good thing to reference, potentially in light of a lack of progress, or I don't know about to say lack of progress, but continuing challenges tackling this issue. So Cheryl, if you could provide a more specific reference or point us in the right direction of where we could find that, that would be very much appreciated. I see Yap is still, Yap, is that an old hand? Yep, and I see Bernie with a new hand because I just saw it go up. Do you want to go ahead, Bernie?
Yes, as I'm listening to all of this, I mean, one of the points that strikes me, I mean, as I said, the PDP I was talking about from the CCNSO a few minutes ago about retirement is, from a knowledge bar point of view, fairly low for people to join. There are, however, other PDPs where I agree. But I think what's most important is that we should be able to understand where that knowledge bar lies. It's not necessarily a point to lower it. There are some PDPs which are going to deal with some highly technical or highly complex issues, and it's not the job of the PDP, I think, to make itself simpler. But this being said, maybe what could help things along is going into a PDP, understanding what level of knowledge bar we're talking about and what would be required of participants, because right now I don't think that's done. At least I know it's really not done in the CCNSO because we just throw things open, but I don't remember seeing it in other areas, and maybe that could fit into what you're talking about here, because then people would know what they're getting into. Just a suggestion. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Bernie. I wonder if there may be scope. Certainly, there are very, very technical issues that are engaged. And, you know, it's not to say that the work of the PVPs should be dumbed down to not address that, because obviously that's not always possible and not desirable from my perspective. But I do think that there's potentially room for discussing some kind of a more robust onboarding or briefings process to allow folks at the very least to grasp where the conversation is, and ideally for people with the baseline toolkit to maybe get up to speed on the specific toolkit that might be needed to engage on a particular issue. Certainly, I think there may be something there. Cheryl, I see your hand is up, and I see you posted a long thing in chat, which I will not read, but perhaps you could summarize or discuss.
I could do, but I typed the long thing in chat because I didn't want to take up valuable conversation time. And I figured chat would be part of the formal reference. But that's okay. That's not why I put my hand up. Why I put my hand up is the sudden uh-oh happened in my head, or actually my heart. And that comes from someone who runs, and I do mean runs, and leads an awful lot of PDPs and has been intimately involved in PDP processes through all the SOs, yes, including at the RIR level. And there is a scary consequence that just came across my mind as I heard you talking, Michael. And that was if we have... use the example within one of the numerous and poorly scoped GNSO PDPs, who's going to be doing this care and feeding of the individuals who want to step in, let alone step in and step out and then step back in again, with the PDP process going on the way it currently does? And here I'm selecting my language very carefully. If it is an expectation that that will be done in-house within the PDP process, then that's going to be seen, I believe, as an unreasonable and undue burden on those trying to run an effective and efficient PDP process. In other words, your leaders and the staff associated with that PDP process. If, however, it's materials that are created as a requirement, if not highly recommended activity, that can in fact be as simple as the recording of the webinars, which are now frequently done. We are many, many PDPs and things have, you know, webinars that, at the front and before and around various report releases, initial reports, mid reports, final reports, and any calls for public comment. So that type of stuff has improved. How many people actually turn up to them is questionable at times, but certainly the actual webinars happen. But it strikes me, if you were creating a useful tool to do this onboarding, that was housed in, for example, the ICANN Learn World. And as I say, it can be as simple as, you know, a few questions and a specially curated webinar set that has to be created anyway. That isn't going to put the same impost. So we need to be careful about what we recommend as solutions associated with this, because then people can make sure that they are up with the basic stuff, the onboarding stuff. In terms of where things are up to, that's where a well-designed and appropriately updated, continuously updated work plan, an advertised work plan, comes into play. And that is variable between PDP processes because it's variable between leadership styles. So a recommendation on harmonisation of expectations, on methodologies associated with that sort of thing, that could certainly do a lot to to benefit. Thanks. And I don't think I really will speak to the missive. I popped in, but it's got to do with the differences between what we're seeing perhaps with one of the support organisations and the other, recognising that the GAC work with the GNSO has been a focus since ATRT1's recommendations, and we might be seeing the benefit of that long-term work, and perhaps a benefit might be from suggesting that a similar activity is looked at between the CCNSO and the GAC. Thank you.
Can I just push back on something that you mentioned earlier? Why do you think it would be an unrealistic resource request to have staff do some kind of an onboarding, the staff point of contact do some kind of an onboarding?
Oh. Very simply, because when, for example, you've got, let's just take a simple PDP process that is meeting once a week for 90 minutes, right? You also have a leadership team meeting, which would be at least 60 minutes. You have the development of all of the in-between work that goes on, including making sure that the full capture of what goes on in what is then, let's assume, rounding it up, 180 minutes of FaceTime. And it usually takes between two and three times the FaceTime to do the administration. And if unless that someone in staff is almost exclusively allocated to just that PDP, we're talking in excess of a 40-hour week being required for staff to support any more than you know, one and a half or two PDP processes. And, you know, I doubt that any of them only have the support of a PDP process on their job description. If it's coming to the actual leadership team, well, interestingly enough, they're the volunteers who are trying to lead. So, for example, GNSO run, as I know you know, very regular beginners update type onboarding in general activities, which is to encourage the individuals involved in the constituencies and stakeholder groups, or just being interested in a fresh PDP process. They do run, you know, the how GNSO works and what all the jargon's about and what PDP process is and what the PDP process rules are type webinars very, very regularly. It is devastatingly disappointing to see how many people ever bother to turn up to any of them, but the staff do run those. So that's why I think that we could run a real risk of staff spending more time if you've got, for example, let me use the subsequent procedures PDP. There is, without referring to WorkTrack 5, in simply the plenary, right, recognising that there are a different set of people engaged in WorkTrack 5 than is necessarily engaged in the full PDP. So you've got some overlap of actors, but not a full overlap of actors. So ignoring WorkTrack 5's people, you've got around 200 people signed up as members of that PDP process. That's a whole lot of onboarding and updating when you've got a core of around 35 to 42 who are carrying the burden of the work. That's why.
Yeah, I mean, I think that difference between the 200 people that are signed up and the 35 to 40 who are actually participating is key. I guess we might have different understandings of the level of demand for this. I wouldn't necessarily track this back as a responsibility insofar as, you know, creating digests every week of everything that was happened. I mean, you know, the calls are there. And I definitely don't, and I definitely don't agree. And I definitely agree that we
can't be dumping this onto the work party leaders who are volunteers for the most part, who are extremely, Cheryl points out in the chat, they do something of a digest, that they do, anyway, my point though is, you know, I think that there might be scope for a short onboarding session for new members at the request of new members to get them up to speed. And I think that, you know, it's one thing to say, well, the material's out there, which sort of speaks to something that we're going to talk about in a second. And it's quite another to start digging more deeply into its accessibility and how easily available and digestible it is to new members. And I still think that that's potentially a role that we could hand over to staff if placed within appropriate constraints that recognizes how overburdened everyone always is. Bernie has mentioned that we only have 26 minutes left on the call. So I think that we should try to push forward to efficiently as possible address the rest of this, to leave a little bit of time to do the to discuss the survey. The next issue on there is regarding access to information. This again was not properly sourced in here, but it comes pretty directly from a recommendation that Stephanie Perrin made at the NCSG session, which tracks into a broader issue. Availability of the information is a practical challenge given the volume of material that's been made that's being made available. That I think we've heard not just from her, but from a number of people. I think that that's not going to be a controversial challenge. And if we spell that out, the solution that Stephanie it's also, I think, not controversial to discuss the need to focus on data management and accessibility. That is something which I know is already a priority of ICANN with their Information Transparency Project and with the Open Data Initiative. But the solution that Stephanie proposed was to look into hiring a librarian or archivist who specialize in managing, helping people find information, navigating the material, and who are fairly inexpensive as far as employees go. That is a potential alternative to focusing on wikis and just dumping the information out there. That was a potential avenue forward, which was suggested. Are there any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm going to jump in, Michael, because I don't think that's any different than what I was obviously failing to clearly state, that by having properly curated materials available, by using materials that are already being developed, like work plans and, webinars, etc., and having them available, not presented by the staff, I think we might disagree on that. I would prefer it to be available whenever people want it, so that there's less requirement on the volunteer to say, I want to step in now, please, ma'am, can I have some help getting up to speed? Sometimes people don't know what they don't know until they're in the thick of it. And there's a whole lot of other things to help people, like peer support and stuff as well. But that aside, properly curated material from material that's already being produced is vital in my view. So Stephanie and I are in no way in disagreement. And I think the only point of divergence between what I was saying and what you're saying here is the who does it. And I would like it to be freely available rather than needing to be asked for. That's it. Thanks.
Yep. These are separate points of discussion. So certainly agreement on one does not, or disagreement on one does not preclude agreement elsewhere. And it's wonderful to know that you are in agreement with Stephanie on this. And certainly we can flesh that out more broadly as needs be, or flesh that out. So it sounds like that's an idea that we can flesh out a little bit more on the access to information side. In terms of transparency protocols within, I don't see any other hands, so I will move on to the next one. In terms of
stronger and clearer rules on statements of interest, conflicts of interest, and clarity regarding representation and identity. This flows from something that was mentioned at the GNSO session, I think, by Michaeli. But essentially, somebody mentioned, you know, sometimes you're walking around and you see people and you hear a comment, and it's very easy to say, like, oh, that's so-and-so from the GAC, that's so-and-so from elsewhere. And other times it is way less clear to know whether someone is representing themselves, if they're an individual, if they're representing some interest group, if there are shadowy forces at work behind them pushing the discussion in a one way or another. It's a bit of a dramatic way of saying it, but there was the point there, and where I take that challenge to be actionable is in terms of stronger, clear rules on statements of interest, conflicts of interest, and clarity regarding representation and identity. So that is a broad area to look into more clearly now. Cheryl, I think in the chat is noting, I believe with regard to this one, that this is something that she also agrees with. SOIs and continuous update is only part of the story, but may need reinforcement. Yeah, I think that the whole conflict of interest challenge is something that we've certainly grappled with at the NCSG level. And I think that that's something that needs to be, that would benefit from digging into a little more clearly. At the very least from providing some discussion of the problem and potentially pointing towards some possible solutions. So that is kind of a broad area to focus on more clearly. The other area of discussion that came out of the ALAC session was regarding the challenges in terms of their role as representing the interests of the end users. And this, to me, was probably the most interesting moment of the discussions that we had with the different groups, because it's probably where we saw the clearest divergence among within a particular group like this, where there was a lot of back and forth about their responsibility for transparency and accountability, as well as the challenges with engaging internet end users that they, whose interests they represent, and whether or not they even have to. So you had Tijani on the one side basically saying, yes, it's super challenging. I try to do this, but it's difficult. But, you know, we look at the different options and we talk to people and we really try to flesh this out. And I try and do this as best as I can. And then Alan on the other side basically saying, this is all useless. I don't need to do this at all. I have a lot of experience. I know what's in the best interest of the end users. And then sort of between those two, Jonathan Zuck basically turning around and saying, it's super dangerous to pretend that we can do anything but speak for our own accumulated interests. Anyway, there is a lot of divergence of opinion within the ALAC on this particular issue. And I think that it's an area that we should be looking into and providing our own thoughts. At the very least, I think it needs to be clarified. Ideally, I think you need to have some sort of policies related to enhancing this structure. And here, as you see the paragraph, that a little bit is, I'll take credit that that's me pushing or take responsibility that that's me pushing a little bit towards where I think the conversation needs to go. And I also think that this potentially ties into the previous thing in terms of rules on statements of interest and conflicts of interest, as that is, I think, a challenge that ALAC particularly faces, given the nature of their organization. Tola had his hand up, and it's now no longer up.
Yes. Yeah.
Please, go ahead.
Okay, Mike, thanks for what we've done so far. I just wanted to add that you did not include Sebastian's own point of view on, in this same diverse opinion, in saying that no member of ALAC, comprising of just 15 members, will be able to represent at large, which is comprising of so wide numbers of membership. And to that extent, no member of ALAC will be able to speak the mind of the entire at-large membership. And what he was saying was not in between what Alan and Tijani were saying. It was totally different, saying that everybody must be left to air their views and no member of ALAC will be able to represent the entire at-large membership. Just want to point out that we needed to put that into perspective as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Todd. That's very helpful, particularly because I very clearly remember that intervention and I did not understand it because I didn't have a headset with me. So that's very, very useful that you have now summarized what he said. I will take your word on that. And we will certainly include that perspective. Cheryl, did you want to add something?
Yeah, just briefly, and thanks for pointing that out, Tola. That's a very important thing and actually is a great segue to what I wanted to say. We also need to remember that ALAC, of course, is the representative democracy model. It is 15 people whose job it is to represent and to advise the ICANN board and to act in the best interests of the wider internet community of end users. Note, I'm not even saying at-large membership because that is not, in fact, their representational role, but that's what the mandate is for the 15 people. What constantly happens is this ongoing confusion between the word at-large and ALAC. And at-large, which of course is beyond the 15 people, they might be part of it, but that's not their representational role. The whole purpose of having at-large structures and the later creation of regional at-large organisations to facilitate direct input from at-large structures, and this is how the whole at-large movement was designed, was to allow the closer to the end-user community, i.e., the general populations that we're trying to act in the best interests of if you're an ALAC, to have exactly that, Tola, the direct input. The effectiveness and efficiencies involved in all of that has been looked at in a couple of reviews and recommendations have been made and are currently being enacted from the most recent review. But we also need to remember that we've got to talk about the apples and the oranges differently here. And some of the differences of opinion is from, or what it looks like differences of opinion, is coloured by at which bit of the layering they're referring to. And so the difference between, for example, a Tijani comment and an Alan comment is Alan is purely focused on the representational democracy model. That is the way ALAC is designed, and Tijani's focus on the direct model, which is, of course, closer to what goes on in the regions and which is where he's going to now because he's leaving the ALAC, so he's got to pitch his job description for his new role in the closer to at-large structures and membership. So, as again, when we're making our comments, that make sure we're really specific about which bits we're referring to. Thanks.
Yeah, that distinction is well noted. I'm not sure it's at the root of the disagreement, though.
Exactly.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry. Can I just say, Alan and Tijani would not agree about the colour of the ocean if given the opportunity. So please be aware of that.
Well, that's a fair point, but I will note that when you talk about representative democracies, if the elected representatives are not acting in the best interest of their constituents, a representative democracy has solutions for that. And that is how you keep those representatives in check.
Is why the ALAC is what it is. But the ALAC is appointed in that way because it is, in fact, specifically a representative democracy, which every 2 years can be refreshed or not, and more specifically, at any time, individuals who are not acting in the best interests, not only of the wider community, but of those who select them or elect them, depending on whether you're a non-com appointee or a RALO representative, can be removed at any time, and indeed they have been.
But that's...
Michael, I think we need to be conscious of time here. We have just less than 10 minutes.
Sure.
I'll also note I am the only I'm the only person in this group, in this meeting, from the ALAC. I'm not here as chair. I was appointed by the ALAC as a member of the review team. So if you want to hear from an actual ALAC perspective, I will continue to intervene. If not, I'll pop my other hat back on.
No, we definitely are interested in hearing the ALAC perspective. But the recommendations that we come out at the end of the day should not necessarily be, they may not, the ALAC perspective may not be the best perspective to take in developing recommendations with the ALAC if there are problems. So yes, it's extremely valuable to hear the ALAC perspective, but at the same time, you know, I mean, there needs to be a debate among the participants and among the different stakeholders at ICANN about the appropriate shape of the process. Bernie, I see you have a hand up. I do want to, and yes, Cheryl, we should definitely consider ALAC's recent review. Bernie, do you want to intervene briefly before we just take a few minutes to talk about the survey?
Yes, because it may be relevant. After looking through your document, and I was trying to do some cross match with what's in the bylaws that is required of ATRT 3. There's one thing that I think is the responsibility of the community working party that I didn't see, and that's assessing the extent to which ICANN's decisions are supported and accepted by the internet community. So anyways, if
that's interesting,
you know, that's one of the, you know, seven key points that this review is responsible for. Sounds pretty much like it should be in your bailiwick. And if that's the case, then maybe we should consider that, especially before crafting anything for the survey. And if you don't think it is, then we should talk about it at the plenary. I'm just trying to make sure no one forgets anything here.
Yep, that's very useful. Thanks. And I think that yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess could I just ask a follow-up? When you say the community, is that the ICANN community or the global community of internet users?
Let me pull out the exact wording here. Assessing the extent to which ICANN's decisions are supported and accepted by the internet community. Full stop.
So... in my mind, that ties very, very closely to the discussion that we were just having, because by far the broadest area of engagement that ICANN is supposed to have, I think, is through these at-large structures. So I think that we can potentially tie those together, but certainly we can pick that up at the plenary as well. Why don't we just take a minute to briefly go through the survey discussion. Erica, do you want to take this forward? This is also included in the same kind of planning document.
Hey, this is Erica. Thanks, Michael. I'd be happy to jump in here. And perhaps, actually, I guess I also have questions for the group as a whole, too. I think looking through this document, we have a few, obviously, we've pinpointed a few areas that we think we should explore more. At the same time, we also have the document we updated, or we had written in preparation for Marrakesh. And for a time, as you know who are there, for a time we asked one question from community for each of the groups, each of the meetings that we had. So there are those questions that we still have, that the majority of which when we had written it out, it was the same questions for each group, for the most part, with a few exceptions, which I think those will probably, if we're on the same page, those will likely go into the survey. But from here and the conversation we'd like to have going forward, and knowing that we only have a few minutes left, I think our best bet with going forward on this too will be to have some of this conversation in the plenary call tomorrow around the survey, but also I guess 2 points would be to talk about this on list, looking through this document that we have here and the points that we've highlighted for any additional potential questions that we want to add to the survey that touch specifically on these preliminary recommendation areas. And my second thought on that note would be perhaps now is maybe a good time as we start to dig into this. Maybe we'd want to have more of a standing call. I know, and up until now, we've kind of had a community call when we've needed. So I'm kind of curious, Michael and anyone else too, if this seems like a good time to maybe already set up another call, maybe plan to have it weekly or biweekly as we start digging into not only these recommendations, because I think there's a lot more discussion to have and there's a lot more material that we're going to be reviewing, but also to discuss things like the survey as well. So I know that was just a jumble of words, but Michael, in particular, I'm curious if that sounds about right to you or anyone else, if you want to weigh in on that for a plan going forward.
Yeah, that sounds good. I think that we'll, as an area of focus, be looking at areas that were weaker on the discussion and to flesh out areas that both we didn't get as much discussion on and where weren't as conducive to the kind of feedback that was structured in the last session. But does anybody else have any thoughts?
Cheryl here. Did you want to add the some additional questions based on today's interactions? Because it seems to me like there might be some drill down or some sub point questions that could come out.
Yeah, Cheryl, I think
you're meeting today. No, sorry. I'm remember I'm in two calls at once. So give me a microsecond to switch between things. Thank
you. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, Cheryl. Yeah, I think from here, there's been a lot for us to dig into. I think I'm inclined to have our conversation tomorrow on the survey, kind of informing where the group as a whole is going next. And then perhaps before the end of the week on list, we can try to compile any additional questions that relate to these recommendations or these areas specifically that we feel we need to dig into it even more, and then share on list to have that discussion and drill into it as you put it, Cheryl. Okay, noting the time and not seeing any other hands, I think that's a good place for us to kind of wrap things up for today, knowing we're going to obviously continue some of this conversation on our call tomorrow. And we can also, I think, Michael, for you and I, it'll be helpful to maybe connect before the end of the week if we want to try to come up with some additional questions to share with others and also maybe float the idea of another call. Just to continue having this conversation as new information comes in.
Yeah, we should definitely, with our accelerated time frame, we should, I think, try to do another call next week.
Perfect.
Can I just be selfish and say, from my perspective, another call is fantastic, but I would really appreciate if it is around this time of day. For me to start at 4 a.m. is certainly not a problem. But if I'm doing a midnight or a 1 a.m. local time call, that means I don't get back to sleep, which means I do end up in 36 or odd hour flight cycles without, because now my ordinary day starts. So if it is possible to be around the time you did today, that would be very selfishly my preference. And we should also try and get more of the diversity that you've got in your work party, because I know right now It's the GNSO domination of with Yap and I sprinkled in for decorative purposes. you might want to poke at some of your other work party members to make sure you get the full diversity that you should have in it. And you'll hear less from me that way.
Certainly, we can give that a shot. I'm surprised at your enthusiastic endorsement of a 4 a.m. start time, but definitely we can keep it at the same time if that's helpful, or if that's
4 a.m. is fine.
Yeah, too many years at ICANN, you've gotten too used to the sleepless nights. All right. So with that, I guess should we wrap it up and say thanks to all of you for joining us, as we are now 1 minute over, and we'll look forward to chatting with you all tomorrow. All right. Take care. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.